This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Since we are a top four team now, we're doing a bonus podcast for you. This isn't the main show. Joining me to answer some questions, Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome.
Hello, mate.
Hello.
By the way, I am eating Chinese at the moment, and it has started to repeat on me, so be warned.
Uh-oh.
I will move my mouth away from the mic when I'm munching, so I don't have to ASMR it down your ears.
So what? So we're not doing a mukbang then? You not heard of a mukbang?
No.
Go on YouTube. It's where people just watch other people eating. It's bizarre.
More people watch people play games than people play games.
Weird,
it's kind of a weird world we live in. I mean, like that whole goggle box where people watch people watching TV. It's this kind of weird parallel universe that I want to take no part in.
More people watch Villa on YouTube than they do being the waiting list for a season ticket.
Watching people watching Villa. How far down the rabbit hole do you go? Watching people all the way down.
This is very Tristan Shandy, the book. I don't know if you're aware of that book. It's like one of the big head fucks of literature. And actually, Steve Coogan was in a film where Michael Winterbottom, the director, tried to make Tristan Shandy as a film, and I went to see an early screening of it. And the premise is, in the book you're kind of referencing yourself, and then the reader is reading himself reading the book, and it gets all weird. And so they've tried to replicate that in a film. So they have themselves sitting in a screening room in Soho watching the film that they're in within the film. But the extra twist is, I'm actually in the same screening room in Soho watching their film in the same screening room in Soho. So whichever PR planned that screening to be in the same screening room as they are in the film watching the film, it was a genius move. But anyway,
maybe we should do a podcast listening to the podcast that we recorded.
There's some free content for us. We can double our output. Right, anyway, this is a bit more freeform, this podcast, so do excuse us. I will not visit my plate of Chinese food for the next few minutes. Firstly, though, supporting the My Old Man Said podcast throughout the festive period is NordVPN, and they are offering listeners an extra 4 months free on top of cracking savings on their VPN package, which can potentially help with that festive viewing, especially if you're away from home this Christmas, as a VPN enables you to watch sporting events and TV shows by switching your virtual online location from a physical location that might not allow you to watch certain matches at certain hours. While at the same time, it also protects your online privacy on up to 6 devices. To get the exclusive package and also a no-risk 30-day money-back guarantee, go to nordvpn.com/moms or check out this show's program notes as well. Thank you very much. Right, mad few question and answers. Some of the questions posed to us by My Old Man Said members. If you're not a member, what are you doing with your life? If you want to know more than the average Villa fan, get involved. Go to the website, myoldmansaid.com, and click on the members link and join us, and you'll also get ad-free podcast shows, extra shows, and also membership of Match Club. Right, Al Jones asks, does VAR actually benefit Villa in terms of their high line? VAR is like a safety blanket for Emery's offside trap, as often the margins are very tight between onside and offside. Before I pass it on, I would say it's essential to Emery's high line.
Well, Al's kind of answered his own question, yeah? It's like a safety blanket, isn't it?
Well, it's more than a safety blanket. I think it's the foundations that it's built on, isn't it?
Yeah. If there was no VAR, Emery wouldn't play that offside chop in that way.
It would be just far too risky.
Because it's a very marginal gain, but it's a kind of high-risk, high-reward way to play, which seems to be the Emery outlook.
There's no way you could leave it in the linesman's pocket.
Not anymore.
No.
No way.
And the thing is, when you get these, if we ever get semi-automatic offsides in, on the Premier League, it'll be even better.
It'll speed the game up.
In human nature, there's this tendency to want to kind of balance things up. So if Son's already on a hat-trick of disallowed goals, the next one, the linesman's probably going to let it go, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, that answers that question pretty much. Mark Hazard asks, are there any players in the current squad you would sell on in January? And who would you realistic and improved replacement be?
I don't know. Would I sell anyone? No, because we had a bit of a clear out. Emery's kind of had that, hasn't he, already? It feels like he's kind of cleared out the guys he doesn't want there. I think if anything, I wouldn't necessarily be replacing you. I think the mindset is now upgrade if possible or backup. Yeah. So you're looking at you're probably looking at a cash right back option, maybe a backup. It depends on the budgets. You know, we have no idea what position we're in.
Yeah.
I think you need cover anyway. So that'll be one. Possibly striker cover, maybe Olsen. A backup goalie.
I'm sorry. I'm saying Olsen.
Yeah, Olsen has to go and the new keeper has to come in. That's 100%.
Other than that?
Yes, Olsen got a clean sheet at Tottenham last season, but, you know,
didn't have a save to make.
Didn't have a save to make against those.
Yeah, and we've seen Spurs finishing.
Jumps.
The only way Spurs scored was a deflection, so we've seen their finishing ability.
So it's not sort of wholesale changes for me.
Yeah, when you look at the team, we spoke about upside before Emery even came to town, and Emery's tapped into that because there was always plenty of upside in the squad we had. And there still is currently because you haven't seen Zanioli yet. There's more to come from him potentially. And, you know, he's only fresh in. Tielemans is on his way. He's getting better and better.
Diaby, we've seen flashes from. He's only going to get better, I think, over the course of the season.
That's the thing that I'm quite happy about is we haven't even turned the afterburners on yet.
Other than a couple of games where we've blown
teams
away.
There's still a lot to come from this team. And that's what has me cautiously optimistic. And also the fact that despite going into this season with four, let's say, first teamers injured, we've managed that pretty well to be in 2 points off the top. We've managed that really well. And now we've got two of those guys back. So if we can get to the end of December without any major injury concerns, then could be interesting.
And I suppose it'll be interesting to see how, now we're kind of where they want us to be, how ambitious the owners get.
Well, as financial fair play, that is a big stickler.
Yep.
And this next question, it was actually set in October. So apologies for letting it stew, but now it's even fun. It's funnier now. Hella Villain in Match Club says, would it be possible to cash in on Yuri, that's Tielemans, as early as January? And who would be blind enough to take him?
It's aged well.
If we can't, is there any optimism that he can get up to a level we've come to recognise from Emery's players?
Yeah, he's
not
going anywhere.
Well, Emery's beating you to the punch there. He's getting up to the level.
But we're getting flashes from him, and that's, you know, from attacking players, that's what you need.
Yeah, he's definitely becoming a very useful tool in the kit, shall we say. Yeah. Will asks,
this is a good one.
Thing you've been most wrong about to do with Villa? Player, manager, just any bad shouts that you're not willing to admit to? I think the thing most wrong about to do with Villa was actually supporting them in the first place. The last 10 years has just been misery and pain. And then even when we were finishing sixth all the time, that was viewed in those days in that context as an underachievement. And that was just massively frustrating. And, you know, as a young kid, I saw Villa win the European Cup. So it's almost like I started off at a high, a bit like Ange Postecoglou. I always remember reading something when they were top. This is like after six or seven games where they said, the only way is down for Big Ange. And that was true.
Yeah,
and that was pretty much my Villa destiny.
Yeah, I think I've been most wrong about with the Villa.
But let me give you some context. This question is a loaded question because it's referencing, this came after Douglas Luiz had a blinder game recently. And of course, going back to last summer's transfer window when it was getting to deadline day and Arsenal were flying, you know, floating around like a vulture. And the word on the street was, he was up for the move and they were very close. And it was kind of a matter of give us a couple more million because we've got to pay Manchester City a sell-on fee and the deal's done. But the owners also, I think the owners stepped forward. Basically, I think they said to Gerrard, do you want this player? If you want him, we'll make sure he stays. Because they would have said, is he any good? Do we really want him? And they're a big part of him staying because within, they would spend more if it wasn't for financial fair play. That, you know, they are, we kind of underestimate how big they are. So in that respect, if you can get 25 million for Douglas Luiz at that time, when he was in and out of the team, it's not as if he was like a gilt-edged starter. I would have taken the money because there's no guarantees. And, you know, I'm not apologizing for that any shape or form. So that's where this question came from. And you know, that I wasn't wrong in that call because if he went to Arsenal and, you know, fucked off, then what else can you do?
I think the times that I've been most wrong was the two times that I thought Aston Villa were going to win the league. And first time would have been under Big Ron whenever Staunton scored at Old Trafford. I thought we were going to do it. Then the second time would have been whenever they came back from 2-0 down to beat Arsenal 3-2 and Santa fell off the roof or fell on the roof.
Yeah, those were the top of Christmas, weren't we?
Yeah, those were the two times I thought it's happening. This is it. But so now I just don't think anymore.
I would go with, I suppose my most recent one was, we can laugh about this one though, when we bought Danny Drinkwater and I thought, oh, that might be a savvy move. Fuck me, that wasn't it was one of those, oh, if you can get a tune out of him, well, we did not.
Yeah, I'm trying to think
sort of more historically.
Well, Gerrard, nobody could have predicted that he would have been as big a failure as he was. All he had to be was average and it would have been enough for him.
Yeah.
Well, it's not as if we were saying he's the greatest manager ever though, is it? This is what you got wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing is, I'm not somebody who cheerleads and does handstands because of, I'm always like, proof's in the pudding. I want to see him first. I mean, I remember a certain individual writing a blog about Tim Sherwood and then sponsoring the match ball and then printing out that blog and giving it to Tim Sherwood at the photo opportunity.
Oh, God, yeah.
And because they met Tim Sherwood, you know, he was the greatest thing for Villa, blah, 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 blah. And we are here looking at Tim Sherwood and going, good to get him in to like rally the troops for just to get out of there. But in terms of long term, and this guy's a charlatan, and that was the party line.
I also remember very, very briefly thinking when Dr. Tony came and you thought, oh, this guy's got some money when he was splashing the cash. We'll be all right here.
Well, you obviously weren't listening to me and Dan Rogers.
As I said, it was very brief. When did he arrive? In about June. And then by about September, we were like, oh, God.
Me and Dan Rogers up to like 3 a.m. in the morning searching the internet for any evidence that Recon Group were actually legit.
Yeah, I remember now.
Anyway.
I also remember thinking much further back to when I was quite young, thinking, oh, wow, Sasa Churchich will be the big player that pushes us on. Yeah, to the next level.
I thought he would be better than he was. Also, Lambert as well. I thought he'd be better. Yeah. He turned into something I never knew he would. Maybe it was a kind of Villa thing. We used to always joke, didn't we, that after a year or so at Villa, any manager's hair would suddenly turn grey and their wrinkles would grow and they'd be a half man after a year. Anyway, let's move on. Lee asks, Lilob, has anyone asked how many season ticket holders are in the North Stand and where are they going to place when the redevelopment takes place? This is a question that's been asked at fan advisory board meetings a few times, but it's always kind of kicked into the long grass. Well, we'll make announcements, etc. in due course. I think the only time we kind of doubled down on a conversation, it was essentially that if the capacity is around, let's say 32,000, because you're going to lose, is it eight, ten, something like that?
Ish, yeah.
Then you could be looking at season ticket holders only at Villa Park for a season and a half. So they'll be redistributed, but it'll be like redistributed around the three stands. And that is as good as an answer I can give you at this moment.
Yeah. And then in terms of the new stand, you know, who knows? They'll get first dibs on wherever they want to sit, I suppose. So.
Yeah. When once they see the prices, they'll be like, oh, shit.
Doug Ellis it is.
No North Stand for me. Nick PT asks, is the Villa commercial and marketing team really up to the task they've been set? And is the club capable of turning around the last few months to start bringing fans along with them? This is the notion of on the pitch, it's going great. Off the pitch, people are feeling a bit alienated. Maybe the marketing team, this commercial team, is taking advantage of Unai Emery's upswing and the kind of positivity that he's brought in terms of on the pitch. So they're cashing in now and kind of really blatantly, if you ask me. Now, this is something I said exactly the same in front of Ben Hatton, the chief operating officer, who is like Chris Hecht's number two. And he took umbrage with it. You know, he basically said, I disagree because, you know, we have 42,000 happy people at Villa Park every game. Which isn't strictly true, because there's sometimes less than 42,000 because there's been banks of seats that are empty because they're trying to upsell people into the terrace view and lower ground. And they left them like that and didn't sell them on to the general public. So I wouldn't say 42,000. Also, this is something that they've stopped doing now. They are releasing them, I think, with about a week to go or whatever, to try to sell them rather than just, it's not a bad look. And when the owners come, they expect this stadium to be sold out every game. So when if they see any empty seats, they're not happy. You have to see it over, I don't know, a season at least, really, because, I mean, I wasn't happy about the principle of there were lower grounds where you have the Holt suite and that there was no communication before you bought your season ticket that was being taken away. And even, you know, after the season started and it wasn't open for the Everton game, they were communicating to fans as if it's like, oh yeah, it's just been refurbished, it'll be, you know, open next week, leading us down the garden path. So that was taking the piss and just not transparent and honest. And that's what you kind of ask, you know, if they said, right, Holt suite potentially going. When they also announced before, I think it was in April, that there'll be no more free home cup game. So at least when you're buying your season ticket, you know, say at that point, and then you're like, well, okay, you know, then you make your decision, don't you? You're not being hoodwinked later on where they take a benefit away that you expected you were getting. So you've got to, for them, whether it's up for the task, well, that's a results-driven business. I mean, if they made a shitload of money, but all the fans were just now customers and had no connection to the club, we would feel that they were not up to the task, but maybe the owners would see the financial results and go, well, no, they're perfectly up for the task. So it's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
There's a balancing act to be had.
You can make money by doing the right thing. And I look at the people currently, and I don't think they're on that wavelength.
I actually look at Tottenham, and their stadium is a great example of how you get the balance right. They've got a really defined cop end, haven't they? And they look after their core support really well. But then they've got multiple tiers of, you know, really entry level, but informal hospitality right up to almost sort of Michelin level top quality thing. And that's the modern way to do it. You have to have the broadest offering possible, but you have to look after your core support as well.
Trying to get in, was it a couple of seasons ago? I didn't have an away ticket, but I found this voucher thing where they were literally giving away like some kind of soft hospitality for £99. So me and my friend went for it, and our minds were blown what we saw. It was another level of going to see the football. I mean, I'm not going to bore you with the details here, but it's night and day difference to going to Villa Park. But now Villa Park, they're trying to sell a padded seat for £80, which is almost like that £99 or over £80. And you're thinking, fucking hell, that's taking the piss.
You're just ramping the prices up, but you're not actually adding anything to the... This is the thing, you're adding price, but you're not adding value, especially if the value of a season ticket is probably going down where the price keeps going up, and a match ticket as well for fans who, you know, don't go as regularly.
Anyway, so answer Nick's question. Well, we'll see where they are at the end of the season, and also let's see where season ticket prices are going, because they have taken the piss the last two times. I understand if you're playing catch-up after the championship, but you don't really hike them that high when there's a known like economic situation and people are actually struggling, and then actually reference that in your comms to support us, going, oh, we understand people are having a hard time, but also we have costs as well, which other clubs did, but they put theirs up like 4-5%, which is what you would expect from that comms. We have costs too. Inflation has made putting on football games more expensive. You go, yeah, fair enough. 5-4%. If you see that increase, you go, yeah, you can buy into that from what they've said. But when they say, oh, you know, we have costs too, and they go at 15%, it's like, I'm taking the piss there. There's no two ways about it. Don't even come at me with that. Oh, we understand it's a hard time for everybody at this moment. If you're going up 15%, don't even mention that. Just go for the throat. Just say, right, your tickets are up 15%. Come up with some other excuse. Stephen asks, assuming acceptance of any external entity, Premier League Football Association, what capacity of stadium would you be able to justify moving away from Villa Park, B6, 4? If moving, what distance in miles would you accept for every additional 1,000 in capacity? Would you accept 1 mile, 5 miles, 10 miles per additional 1,000? Is there a maximum distance irrespective of how many miles to Barbados?
Yeah, to play in front of 1,000 people would be great.
Doesn't really matter, I don't think, distance, as long as it's within, you know, spitting distance of Birmingham. It's more about the site, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And at the moment, the thing I like about Villa, it's next to a stately home, Aston Hall, which they don't really link. They're going to link up a bit more in the future with that. And, you know, I've said years ago, like, you've got to lean into that, because whatever football club has bloody stately home and a park next to it.
Yeah, such a defined identity, you'd be stupid to not lean into it. A bit like, you know, what the Red Sox do at Fenway Park and teams like that, rather than moving to a generic bowl at like Star City or something. You just, would I justify moving away from Villa Park? The reality is, Stephen, that I don't think our fan base is as resilient to, say, go up to a 60,000 stadium yet. I think we're going to max out at just over 50 when the North Stand's done, is my prediction. I don't think, you know, the demand is there yet.
The 37,000 waiting list, I can tell you for a fact, only about a seventh of that have actually been to Villa Park in the last 5 years.
So that shows what the genuine demand is.
Yeah. So the next step, 50,000... That's fair enough. Will you be filling it every week? There's no guarantee. We would have to carry on being a top four club, put it that way, at this moment in time. Obviously, if you stay a top four club for a few seasons, then that has a knock-on effect, because the TV coverage, worldwide TV coverage, has a knock-on effect, and you do amass a new fan base, overseas fan base, and you get more of the tourist fan.
If Villa were to move in Birmingham, where would you want to move to?
Well,
I've always liked football stadiums that are kind of on by like rivers and stuff. So I think I'd almost knock down the NIA and put it there and kind of have Villa Park at the canals and stuff. I think that'd be quite cool. Although I'm sure the people of Brindley Place and the bankers and all that would be really glad to have 40,000-50,000 football fans there every other week.
Well, we don't care about them. But Aston suffers because it's a dump. But potentially it could be better.
Yeah.
Because of that stately home thing. I mean, if you imagine 50 years in the future, real gentrification going on, I mean, it would take probably half a century to achieve anything near. But that could be a real picturesque borough, if you use your imagination.
It could go very Hackney, couldn't it?
Yeah, that's where I'm kind of coming from. And then things like that stately home, and that will be opened up. They'll probably take some of the trees down in the middle, so it really opens it up to to Villa Park, and you would have a real unique experience there. You know, people sitting on the hill, the bank, as part of the pre-match, rather than just, you know, taking a sneaky piss behind a tree, which it probably serves as now.
Serves well, thank you very much.
But it could be really something. So
yeah, it could. I agree.
This is the thing. There's not that many super options in Birmingham to move it, because some of the cooler areas, the upcoming, are Blues territory, like the Digbeths, etc. But, you know, you couldn't really drop a stadium in there. No. Next, that close to the Blues. Drop it on St. Andrews. Just wipe them out in one.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Sweet. A question regarding, this is Stephen again, is it? Same Stephen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Question regarding the common wisdom that new managers need time. Do they? Look at what Emery has done with Gerrard's squad, which wasn't that different from Dean Smith's squad. Do the best managers actually need time? Is that an excuse used for poorer managers? I think Emery had a good position because you're looking at a team that actually Villa were buying good players and they were slowly building a squad through Smith, through Gerrard. So it's almost like every transfer window that passed, that squad got better and it wasn't actually deteriorating, was it? It was building up. And then Emery would have looked at that squad to say yes to this job. It's not like, oh, Aston Villa, yeah, they're a big club. They won the European Cup once. Oh, yeah, I'll take the job. No. Mm-hmm. He had analysed that squad. He looked at it and he thought, is this the foundations? Yes, the owners will spend. They will support me. But have I got the foundations here to get out the traps fast? And actually, within a season, because I would say he overachieved getting into Europe in the half season that he had. And he would have analysed that squad and go, yeah, this is, and seen the upside that we were seeing as a bloody podcast. So he had a kind of a unique situation because he inherited, let's say, an asset which was really undervalued because it didn't have good enough managers to utilise it. I mean, Dean Smith, what's his greatest achievement? It's winning a playoff final. This isn't top-end managerial. What's Stephen Gerrard's greatest achievement? It's winning the Scottish Premier League. If you manage Celtic or Rangers, you've got a 50-50 chance. We had a good enough vehicle, but we didn't have a good driver, I think, is how I would look at it.
And also, you know, the thing of, do they need time? Well, like you said, Emery had a unique position, and of course he did, because most managers don't come in, play a couple of games, and then have weeks and weeks of a World Cup to sit and fine-tune and analyse and get themselves settled in the air and all that stuff. So he was very fortunate in that sense that he got the early wins. But those two wins in the first couple of games were huge for him, and the fact that he started well. And then he got the time to go away and really analyse the team, work out what he needed to do in the market.
Yeah, because, I mean, me being more of a chicken shit, this is the way I thought he was going to play. He was going to say, I'll take over, I'll start after the World Cup.
I remember we spoke about that.
Yeah, because he had two tough games.
And they could have been in a really difficult position. If they'd have lost both of those games, you could potentially have been in the bottom three.
You would have been, definitely.
Luckily, we won them both, and all of a sudden we flew into mid-table pretty quickly.
Because I thought, you don't want some stench on your record straight away, do you? Let's say, feasibly, you lost those two games. Then you've lost that aura already. You know, you've lost a little bit of your mystique. But the fact that he gambled and said, yeah, I'll go for it now. I mean, he backed himself big time because he won those games and then suddenly was in such a good position because suddenly his players have got belief straight away.
And it did take time. You know, you remember the meeting with, you know, Damian walks and says, you know, A, can you stop telling Douglas Luiz to keep shooting from corners? And B, can you just be patient with us playing out from the back? That took a bit of time. So we sort of had the initial plan similar to Gerrard, where he turned it around quite quickly and made it much more resolute. But to actually implement the Emery style on the team took a bit longer. And there were the bumps in the road. You know, that sort of three-game period, you know, with the Arsenal, Leicester, and I forget the other game.
City.
Of course, City away. Now we can look back over the whole body of work and say, well, that was quite a defining period because he probably learnt a hell of a lot. And then the players kind of came through the wall a little bit, you know, through the growing pains, and then flourished in the back end of the season.
Yeah.
So you do need time, but you also need sort of resource and
you need ability as well.
Yeah. Because sometimes some of the worst managers, it's the worst thing you can give some of the managers is time. We've already mentioned Tactics Tim. Tactics Tim's a 6th month shot in the arm. He's not a manager.
Yeah, the longer he had, the worse he got.
And admittedly, they sold all his best players.
The thing, the conclusion on Smith, and you know, this is what Purslow said, was this was a manager who wasn't going to get his eighth in the season they got rid of him. And he wasn't, and this is the telling line, he wasn't going to get his eighth the following season either. And that's kind of played out. He's done shit, hasn't he? Well,
he's had some really weird gigs, hasn't he, to be honest? They're kind of strange jobs. He was on a bit of a hiding to nothing. But
now, Gerard, I would actually... It's going to sound strange, but I would actually have a bit more sympathy with Gerrard just because everybody he bought got injured long term.
They did.
Carlos, Kamara, Luca Dean, the three big buys of his. And let's not even mention Coutinho because he was like kind of rice paper, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So when, I mean, I wouldn't have bought him. I mean, that was like one of those, your ego's thinking, well, I can get him. Like, Coutinho's never come to Villa. But at the same time,
come good.
You can't just, I mean, we've mentioned this before, you can't just write off Coutinho as a complete failure because he was catnip for other players to come. Is catnip mm-hmm. the right analogy?
Yeah,
It was kind of the pull, wasn't it? It was the, wow, Villa have gone, they got Gerrard and they got Coutinho. Without those buys, you probably don't get, you know.
You don't get Kamara.
Nope, no chance.
You don't get Carlos.
Don't get Dean, yeah.
You don't get Luca Dean, who's done all right this season. So this is like the universe forming Villa. This isn't like Emery's just strolled in and created everything and it's amazing. There's been a few years here where, like Dean Smith, you got to give him credit for Watkins, Konsa, Ings, and, you know, even fucking Steve Bruce with McGinn.
I mean, that will go down historically. Give Bruce credit; probably one of Villa's best ever transfers in terms of bang for buck.
Yeah, and so you know, you play the social media game. You know, Steve Bruce, potato prick, cabbages, blah blah blah. Steven Gerrard, fucking idiot, blah 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 blah. But actually, they all have a role to play here, and positive role. But you know, you go back a decade, and you're looking at your McLeishes, your Lamberts. Your Sherwoods, they're not actually contributing to anything, are they?
No.
I mean, they brought in Benteke. But...
Well, that didn't go anywhere, ultimately. It was like, this is a waste of time. This player needed to be in a different era of Villa team.
They were kind of like managers, teams and the club, basically. They were just treading water through that whole period. Yeah.
But even like Bruce has at least made a contribution to this current team.
And you'd say the same with Bruce. You know, do you need to give him time? Yeah, but in his second season, he got us to a playoff final.
Yeah. But that was a level of operating that I never wanted to see Villa at. This was like scrambling around. Oh, yeah, Steve Bruce might be able to get us out of a hole here. That was desperation.
What did he spend on Scott Hogan?
Yeah, exactly.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah, don't go into that. That's
how much
more
was Henry Lansbury on a week?
That's more the club buying players rather than like the likes of Bruce specifically. That's like, right, if we get Scott Hogan, he scored like, if we get Codger, he scored 19 goals for Bristol.
Ross McCormack.
Oh, that's a bit unfair on Codger to put him in the same bracket as those two. Codger was all right.
At least he had a good season in a bad team.
He was entertaining.
Codger was bought because he scored 19 goals for Bristol. And they thought, right, we're paying this amount of money for 19 goals. It's as if they expected him to score 19 for Villa. Cormack scores 20 goals a season. Right, we'll give you however much it was. That's going to get us another 20 goals. Oh, Hogan, he's scoring a lot in the first few games. That's going to guarantee us more goals. It's a simple equation. That's how they were operating. And it was like, you do know you've got to actually put these players into a team and a way of playing. Extremely naive. And then you had that clown, you know, running the show and interfering as well. But yeah, it's all about circumstances, isn't it? The squad you inherit. I think as a rule, most managers need time. I mean, look at David Moyes with Everton. One season he was fighting relegation. You could have got rid of him the next, you know, that summer. But then the next season, they're challenging for top four, top five. And then the next season, they're down again, fighting the relegation. You think, should we pull the trigger now? But the season after, you know, he's top six, top five. Sometimes you need time.
What he's done at West Ham?
If you're inheriting a bit of a mess, that's where you need time because you need transfer windows to actually put it together. The good thing about Villa was actually, I mean, Lang and whoever else had actually created foundations that it was actually inviting to Emery to take over and he can apply the finishing touches. And a lot of the finishing touches was getting the best and getting the upside out of the players that he actually had because there was a squad there capable. I mean, sometimes because you support the team, you have a bit more insider knowledge or you watch these players more regularly than, you know, let's say other media, other fans. So you have a bit more sentiment to them and maybe that sentiment blinds you of their actual ability and what they're actually doing. There's always, he'll come good. You know, there's always, you wish for the, you hope for the best. But in this case, you know, we were dropping, you're dropping like 30 million on Buendia, and you've seen flashes of him and you think there's upside to him, and you know it. It's like a fact. You know that this is a player who, if you play him right, will reap rewards. You know where the ceilings are on most players, don't you, if you've watched them a few times?
Yeah, within reason.
But within reason. With Villa, you knew that Mings could be better. You knew that Watkins could be better. I mean, you know, you went through his first season where he hit the post about five times, was offside goals about three or four, and you just knew minor tweaks here, and you got a 20-goal season striker.
Even this season, someone like a Bailey, you thought, you know, he can get better. There's enough there that you can improve. The improvement from when we first bought Louise in that first season in the Premier League to what we're kind of seeing now, you know, X years on, the player that we all hoped he maybe could be.
But going back to the earlier question about who you'd be buying in, if we get into, there's certain players we need now, but as Chris said, there have to be upgrades. And I think if you finish in the top five, then you can access that pool of player a bit more easier.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to be heading.
Yeah.
Right, next. Yeah, as Matt D said, replying to the question that we've just asked about, you know, do you need time or whatever, he kind of just says what Chris copied off Matt. Emery was fortunate the World Cup gave him more time, and then, you know, the good core of the squad.
Mm.
And it also, you know, he points out, you know, he still managed to get beat by Stevenage.
Yeah. Well, that's part of giving people time, isn't it? You have to allow for bumps in the road.
Exactly. Charles P, good question. How many Villa players will score double-digit league goals this season?
Ooh.
Three.
One.
What?
One.
Three?
Three.
Who are these three?
What's going to happen after Christmas?
Aston Villa 12, Crystal Palace 0.
I think Watkins.
Luton 0. Aston Villa 8.
I think Bailey will get, Bailey's sort of.
Manchester City getting 3. Aston Villa 9.
It's going to be like the 1800s, isn't it? Old school Villa.
Are we even convinced that Watkins is going to get double digit
league?
Oh, he's got double digit. Sorry, it's just over 10. Sorry, yeah, I was thinking 20.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
No, yeah, double digit. I think three.
Who?
I think Bailey, Watkins, and who's the third? And I reckon Louise will get double digits. I'm going to take out the league. I'm going to say in all competitions.
Oh, no, fuck that.
No.
League. I'm saying Watkins, that's it.
I'm going to stand by the three.
I'll say two. Somebody else will creep in.
Not Zaniola.
Louise from penalties.
Yeah.
So a lot of diving on the horizon. We haven't got that secondary forward striker chappy.
No, and that was the answer.
I mean, I'd love McGinn to chalk up 10. Don't think it's going to happen.
I'd love Torres to do it.
If Ramsey was fit and had three or four in the bag already, then maybe him.
Pau Torres, 8 more headers from free kicks and corners.
Well, we'll see, but I can't see it. Right, final question. Brenty UTV asks, what's Danny Murphy's problem with Villa? Seems a bit agitated on match of the day whenever having to comment on our games.
It's just his general demeanour.
It's kind of sour anyway. I mean, I don't mind that kind of tone if you got something to say. I mean,
he
I don't like
much
the,
to say either.
Yeah, I don't like the children's TV, everybody's excited, everybody's happy approach. I mean, as you can tell by this podcast. but Danny Murphy.
Yeah, Mika Richards isn't getting an invite.
Danny Murphy would probably fit nicely in this podcast. But yeah, he's just a bit sour. But when does he get excited? I think it's when it's a real safe bet, really. When he's talking about, I don't know, Liverpool or Manchester City or whatever.
He was actually very complimentary of Villa post Spurs. Which I was kind of surprised that I thought he'd really go after Villa playing the high line and it not working. But
you've hit the nail on the head. The problem with these pundits are they're brought in for the traditional Big Six or Sky Six or Super League Six, whatever you want to call them. And if you take them off the script of them, they don't know what to say. So they're not happy at having to go off script in case they look stupid. They haven't done their homework.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to be really well researched on all the teams all the time. You can't watch all.
Exactly. I mean, the layman still thinks that, you know, people on Sky, people on TV know more than everybody else. There's no way any of these suckers know more than we do and the listeners of this show, because we watch it inside and out, our ears to the ground. And to think that, oh, I need to watch Match of the Day to find out what they think about Villa, because that's what counts the most. It's like, nobody gives a shit. Who gives a fuck with that? Danny Murphy's not watching the ins and out of Aston Villa. He didn't have to. Producers prep, they give him some stats, and then they just perform in front of the camera.
And every now and then someone will come out with a really insightful little bit of tactical stuff. And that's the stuff that you get from pros. But in terms of the broad strokes of Villa's season and the, you know, when they say, oh, Villa have been doing this really well. Like, all you hear is the same stuff. Oh, Watkins has been really deadly this season.
You know, Mikko Richards will drop some, he'll mention that he played for Villa to try to give you some gravitas to what he's saying. But he knows no more than we do about what's going on. And I'm sorry, but he doesn't know as much as we do because he didn't watch the games as much as we do. That's the fact. And that, you know, anybody with a Villa podcast will know more, as you know, as long as they've got their head screwed on and they know what they're talking about. You know, some people on YouTube who are really good, they've got their own thing going on, and then you see the comments, people going, oh, you know, you should work for Sky, or you know, you know your career's only going to go up. It's like, well, actually they're doing better than anything that Sky can do. It's more original. It's more interesting.
I mean, look in a different lane to the pundits, but look at like someone like what Romano's built. He's built his own thing, hasn't he? And now he's kind of like the go-to guy.
Whether you like him or not, it's immaterial. It's the fact that he built his own thing. You know, media is different now. You can, as a single person or a group of friends or whatever, build something that's a lot more interesting and more engaging and more real, that engages with people than anything the main broadcasters can do. All they've got is money. And this is the fun thing, is the competition is stacked so far against you. Because here we all are, you know, doing it out of spare rooms and whatever, left to our own devices, and you're fighting multi-million pound meat. Well, you're not up against them, but you're in the same lane as multi-million, billion media companies. But a lot of them haven't got an idea between their arse cheeks, have they?
And they're not creative.
They aim for a broader demographic, so you don't have to be that inventive. So what was the question?
What's wrong with Danny Murphy?
Yeah. No, it's interesting to me how he got that gig. I didn't necessarily have any aversion to him per se. It was just like, well, surely there's better maybe. But yeah, the level isn't
there's
that
great.
There's
a few great. Like that though now.
But I'm old school. I mean, I would just happily just listen to Barry Davis commentate on a game. That's all I needed. But anyway, yep. Moving on. Al Jones asks, there will undoubtedly be some big money bids for one or more of our key players at the end of the season. Who is the most likely to be targeted and by whom? If we finish top five, we don't have that problem.
Yeah. If you don't get Champions League, you are probably looking at Martinez, I would say.
Luis.
Because we're on a mission now, and these guys, they're in a better place than they could possibly be because they're all part of this mission.
And they're fairly secure in the team as well.
Yeah, and you've got owners that if somebody is, let's say, Chris Budd's prediction comes true and we've got like three double-digit scorers and they're all demanding more pay, the owners can sort that out. It's not as if we're struggling for cash, put it that way.
No, it's not after we sell Dendonker to Zod FC or ZFC for 50 million. Can't wait.
But finishing top five will cure a lot of that problems. I mean, we'll have other problems. We've still got to compete at that level because we will be up at another level. And
probably a couple of levels.
The status quo of financial fair play will keep us back a little bit. But then again, at least you've got Champions League money to, let's say, grease the wheel.
I think it's important regardless to be in European competition next year again.
Oh yeah, 100%. But we need to be for the purposes of this question, we need to be top five.
Yeah.
Also, while you're still in the hunt, players aren't turning, you know, the heads aren't being turned. So I don't think at this stage, I don't think we've got a problem. I don't think any of those players will want to play anywhere else than Aston Villa if we're in the Champions League. I mean, you know, Martinez would cream his pants if we're in the Champions League for Aston Villa. Because he's anything that he's gone for and manifested, it's happened. So yeah. I'm all about Martinez's manifestations.
And I think he's the one that will keep the rest on board. He's the key.
I 100% agree. Stefan, final question. If we made a monopoly board of current Villa players, who would be Old Kent Road and who would be Mayfair and who would go to jail?
I think Zaniolo's going to jail. Well, that'll do him.
That's a different thing altogether, though, isn't it?
Just to be on the safe side, Zaniolo goes to jail. Old Kent Road, Olsen. I think Martinez, Mayfair for me.
Yeah, surely.
I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, McGinn's probably like the gas worker or the electric works or something. He's the engine room.
We'll be releasing that. This is my old man said version of Monopoly will be available.
Yeah, Mom's Monopoly will be available for Christmas.
Next Christmas.
It's a pity Henry Lansbury wasn't there. Free parking. That was what he was on that bench.
Right, so enough of this. Please do subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or whatever podcast app you use so that it jumps up automatically. Sometimes I put it out and then use social media to announce it like a day or two after. So if you want to get the show bright and early, it's best to subscribe, follow on whatever podcast app you listen to, especially like the likes of Spotify and Apple. Please do follow us on social media at My Old Man Said 2. Coming up this week, this is an extra. So we did it while I was eating a Chinese. So that's how serious we're taking it, but we wanted to jump on again. Got to feel it when you're in the top four. It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.